Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to this Friday edition of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. If you've been listening this week, we have had a special emphasis on our military families in honor of Veterans Day coming up this weekend. And it has been such a joy to be able to thank people who are bravely serving our country and to be able to think intentionally about ways we can serve them and their families, because as I often say, many times in military families, the unsung heroes are the children and the supportive spouses that are packing everything up and moving and just providing that home base and that security. It has been great. And today is going to be no different. We're going to finish our week by talking with one more special guest talking about military. But first, before we get there, let me remind you about Operation Christmas Child. This is another way to serve children all over the world. You can pack a shoebox, either participate if your church is participating like I did, or you can just go online to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC and find out how to pack your own shoebox. Now, if you follow me on social media, you'll find me at Dr. Nurse Mama, MAMA on Instagram and Facebook, and you will find a video that my radio producer Stephanie and I did where we walked the walk and we talked the talk here. We did what we were preaching for y'all to do, and it was so much fun. We have our boxes ready, they are dropped off, and they are ready to go around the world. So do that as a family project. We would love to see kids getting involved and teaching them to buy gifts for other people. Wonderful, wonderful experience. One of my favorite things to do at Christmas. Well, with that, let me introduce our guest today. Today on the show, we've got Emma Martin. Now, Emma is a seasoned military spouse, just like we were talking about a minute ago, and she's a proud mom of two active duty military service members and two in high school. Emma, I love having moms in the four kids club because that's where I am for sure. She and her husband, an alumnus of the military, just celebrated 22 years of marriage. They're high school sweethearts. How sweet is that? And Emma has been a steadfast support for military spouses and veterans for over 15 years. She's got a Bachelor of Science degree in religion with a minor in ministries and ethics from Liberty University. And right now she is serving as the executive director of the Full Range Foundation. Now, this is a nonprofit organization with a mission to equip and empower individuals by alleviating the impact of moral injury and wartime trauma. Now, how do they do this? They enhance psychological, spiritual, and social well-being through transitional life and mental health coaching services. And Emma, we are so glad to have you here on the program today to teach us a little bit about what you do and how we can help.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. It's been, like you said, I often forget being seasoned. I am seasoned. It's been 2 years since we retired and transitioned out, but you kind of still feel like you're involved in it. You know what I mean?
I bet you do. It is a lifelong calling for sure. Well, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about your background and your testimony?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start with my background. My husband and I met when I was 16, he was 18, so we were both in high school. We dated. It was for a short period. You know, we found out we were pregnant early on in our relationship, and that's when he decided to join. I think it was 2000. So we basically got married, had our first son, all right before September 11th. We were stationed right outside the same base where I was still going to high school, to finish high school. But I think it was 2 years, maybe. Like, they started like training and preparing pretty quickly when September 11th happened. But, you know, we were definitely babies and didn't know anything about what we were about to go into. Really just wasn't prepared for the challenges and the struggles that we face with the separation. I mean, just all the above. My grandfather was a pastor, so I was kind of raised in church, but we didn't see that my grandparents that often until we moved closer back by them. My husband's mother was a minister herself and, you know, was often teaching and preaching and stuff. So we both come from a background of being in the church and having that, but mine was a little more less, I think, than his as far as, like, having a personal relationship with God. It wasn't until, well, more of like when he was deployed before I realized, like, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I knew that, you know, I didn't want to be divorced or have a relationship like my parents had went through and the struggles. And that, by that point, we probably had, I think we had both of our two oldest kids at that point. It was like the early 2000s. So I think I said that was a moment. I remember driving and I said, you know, God, I don't know what I'm doing. And I kind of just like surrendered. So I think, you know, growing up, I had a relationship. I knew there was a God, but it was my early 20s before I realized like the dependency on him versus myself needed to shift.
Well, and then you've raised your kids while your husband served, and now you have children who are serving. What has that been like as a mom, and how has that impacted your faith journey?
So I think, well, my husband actually was getting out the same year my oldest son was going in, so they got to go to airborne school together. And then as soon as my son got stationed where we were, where my husband was stationed at Fort Bragg, which is now Fort Liberty, North Carolina, it definitely shifted my perspective, because as soon as he got home, I think it was New Year's, and I think we were having some shifts going on and, you know, in other countries, and so he had to deploy pretty quickly coming out of AIT and basic training. And I remember crying and bawling, and my husband had never been on the home front during separation like that, so this was new for him. But he also had never seen me be emotional, because I was so busy trying to hold everything together while he left. I wasn't able to, so I was able actually to be able to like kind of just let it all out, because my husband was home and able to be beside me during this time. So it was scary, but also at the same time, you learn something different within your marriage and with your child during moments like that, of like who you have in your corner.
Well, how did that lead to the organization that you're working with right now? Tell us a little bit about what the work that you do.
So I think when I was in my late 20s, we started going to a church outside of where we were stationed, and I started serving on the women's ministry, and then I did the children's ministry, and I was finishing my degree while my husband was deployed. And we kept talking about the mission, and we had a lot of military in our community, and we had obviously a lot of them in a church with us, but we couldn't really figure out like how to keep them connected. The guys or women, both, why they were deployed. And I just remember struggling with that mission and understanding, like, why are we kind of, I don't want to say failing at this, but kind of failing at this. And obviously I was learning more and more about church and God and my personal relationship. So you're kind of experiencing all of it together. And I started seeing my husband's, he started changing over time, because obviously we met so young, we kind of grew up together, and morally in what he believed in, his values, that started shifting. And I started noticing he was a little looser in decision making, or he just wasn't making good choices, I guess, as we got older, you know, and he grew kind of more separated away from us. And it wasn't until I finished up my getting my coaching certificate and training and that I realized like a lot of the neuroscience that goes into your development, you know, during trauma is affected, and you kind of lose. I don't want to say people forget, or I don't want to say people choose. They're willfully choosing not to do what's right or wrong, but trauma kind of disrupts those pathways, and I think they need more help guiding through that time frame. And so, in one of my classes, the minor in ethics, we talked about war and what was right and how you have two wrongs, how do you make, you know, the right decision? And, you know, you have to debate a lot of those things. And I really started realizing, like, the identity crisis that the guys were going through in the military context was what my husband was going through. And so the world is coining it, you know, moral injury, but it's really, you know, when an injustice happens, it's a sin. And it's whether somebody witnessed it, they did it themselves, or it happened to them. And because of that, they start questioning who God is, who they are, and then, you know, the rest of the world around them.
And so then how does the organization come into play? How do you serve families? Where was the connection there?
Well, it started out as I was talking with a friend. So we started out with just doing, just doing coaching. And then when I finished my coaching training, we were talking about how you have to refer somebody out for counseling if they're coming in for coaching, because to help with the emotional distress and the trauma, or whether it's past or current. And I was like doing more research and talking with my the lady that trained me at Center for Coaching Excellence. She said, I think you're onto something about putting the two together. And so I have a friend that's a counselor. She was a veteran herself, and she got out, and her husband just retired recently. We both moved to Florida, and we kind of came up with a program specifically, you know, where we look at the person, you know, from the whole being aspect, like, where are they at in the relationship with God? Where are they at in the mental health area and, like, their social? And we started to just kind of, like, developing our own assessments. So we're looking at all, obviously, a lot of different assessments that you're kind of bringing into the mix. But we realized, like, putting those three together, because it was moral injury is more of an identity base. We knew that that's all what the Bible talks about. I mean, Psalms and David, is one of my biggest exercises we give to people to help them reflect and kind of evoke these emotions out and start walking through, like, where are they struggling in their relationship with God? And usually that's the core of really what's happening with the person.
And so if somebody wants to know more about what your organization is doing, how would they get connected to that, to the Full Range Foundation?
You can go to fullrangefoundation.com. And when we have on events, we've been working with some of the chaplains to put on events, so they'll be coming up next year. We just had one just recently, the Warrior's Quest in North Carolina. So we'll have events that they can get connected and come to, and that's both for the veterans or if they're active duty or not, and then we have separate ones for their spouses. But they also can book online at our website, and they can either pick whether they're transitioning, maybe it's just career development, so they get coaching to kind of walk them through those goals and their values and their purpose to kind of reinforce who they are as a person, so it's not disrupted throughout their career of them not knowing who they are. And then there's ones they can do with their couples where they come in together and we ask what their goal is as a couple. And then we actually work with both of them separately to bridge them and walk them through how to, you know, get on the same path together.
I think those things are all so important, because we know that the family unit is so important to child health and to responding to resilience to trauma. So whether it is trauma that's happened in the military, which of course, you know, is very significant and can happen, or it's any other kind of trauma, it's so important to empower the adults that are in a kid's life to be able to heal and have their own healing journey, so that trauma that you're experiencing as an adult or as a parent does not then become your child's burden to bear. So getting help for yourself is getting help for your children and for your family. Again, you can find out more about these services at fullrangefoundation.com. Emma, thanks so much for joining us. Don't go away. When we come back, I'm going to give you some Friday encouragement for those parents who may be feeling frustrated. Don't go away. I'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show on this Friday afternoon. Now, I have been hearing from a lot of listeners. I've been talking to parents in my practice, in my community, and I don't know what it is about this week and about this month going into the holidays, but frustration is running high, my friends. I am hearing a lot of parents who just feel tired and frustrated and just kind of worn out by all of the things that are coming their way as parents. And let me tell you, parenting is by far the hardest job that we will ever do if we do it well. So I wanted to take this Friday afternoon, and I don't know where you are, but where I am, it's raining, it's dreary outside. And so I just wanted to have a little fireside chat and just talk with you, with our community, and give you some encouragement. So if you're that parent, that grandparent, that guardian, or whatever the role is that you have in working with kids, just stick around, because I have some encouragement for you. Just this morning on my Instagram, I posted something about what you can do tonight if your kid is going out. Now, I'm going to talk specifically to parents of preteens and teens. While those toddler years are physically exhausting and you're constantly vacuuming Cheerios and Goldfish and filling sippy cups and changing diapers and lugging around car seats that get more complicated by the day, it shifts when you have teenagers, and those teenage years become more emotionally exhausting. Whereas a diaper explosion can hijack your time for an hour or so, the same thing happens when teens come and they tell you, hey, my friend today said that they think that they're thinking about suicide or something heavy like that. That derails your time as well. And I know you can find yourself being so frustrated because as they get to be teenagers, they revert back to those toddler years, and then all of a sudden everything is about me. And I want you to know that this is very developmentally normal. Now, if you're having conversations at home that all revolve around, when are you going to pick me up? And by the way, can we just have a moment of commiseration about that? I mean, I remember before there were smartphones, I couldn't get a hold of my parents to pick me up. There was one time I spent 4 hours walking around a pharmacy just waiting, thinking eventually they'd notice that they forgot to pick me up. Meanwhile, today's teenagers are texting, where are you? 2 minutes later, where are you? Why aren't you here yet? This is a very real concern. Conversation may revolve around, when are you going to take me shopping? When are you going to say yes to the things I'm asking? When are you going to give me money? Again, parents, I think it's helpful to rethink the way that we are perceiving this situation, because we view it as a personal choice, or we take it as a personal offense. But we have to remember that teens are developmentally wired to be egocentric. They are developmentally wired to think only of themselves. This is literally how their brain is working. So that infamous question of, what were you thinking? Well, they weren't thinking very well, because that prefrontal cortex in their brain that is responsible for executive functioning and decision making doesn't fully mature until the mid-20s. Now, I want to tell you about two theoretical concepts of this egocentrism, things that are common to all teenagers. One is that they carry around with them an imaginary audience. Now, this is a teen's belief that they're constantly being assessed or judged or scrutinized by everyone around them because, you know, in their mind, they are the only person on the stage. Everyone is watching them, which is ironic because all of their peers are, in fact, watching themselves. But that is their mindset. They feel like they have to constantly think about what they wear, what they say, where they go, because they're constantly being assessed and scrutinized. The second one is a personal fable. This is a phenomenon that means that teenagers believe they are unique, they are special, and they are exempt from the rules or consequences. Now, all of their teen peers are thinking like this. So they think this is how life should be. This is the future. And it leads teens to believe that my parents really don't understand what we're going through. I'm on my own to figure this out. And they reject your advice because it differs from the way that they're thinking. So in these moments where we get frustrated and where we take it personally, and friends, I am saying we, because don't forget, I've got a 14, 16, 18, and 20-year-old, so I am right there with you. Instead of taking that rejection personally, we have to reframe our position to think, okay, this is a coaching moment and I need to coach their brain and direct that cognitive pathway. You have to remember that this is only a season. And if you're really honest, you have to think back to how were you when you were a teen and how did you think and how did you treat your parents? There's something really powerful in little gestures that we can do to make our teens feel like they are seen, they are heard, and they are loved. So here is a practical tip for you. Is your teen going out tonight? It's Friday. Maybe they have plans. Maybe they're going to Friday Night Lights. They'll be at a football game, or they're going out with friends. And maybe things are going great at home, or maybe things are a little tense. Here's an idea for you. While they're out tonight, go into their room and make their bed. If it's filled with chip crumbs and cookie pieces, then wash their sheets. Make it all fresh. Make their bed like it is a hotel. Leave their favorite snack food on their pillow with a note telling them how much you love them, how glad you are that they're home safe, and that you hope they get a good night's sleep in a place they're always welcome. But here's the catch, because there is a catch. You can never say a word about this or expect a thank you. I know that's the hardest thing. But again, sometimes these little gestures like that can build a bridge. And when teenagers feel like they're seen and they're heard and they're loved and appreciated, that can make all the difference in the world. So try it out. Let me know how it goes. Because especially sometimes when you feel like you're fighting all of the time, I've talked about this before, but I'm going to talk about it again because this is something I'm hearing come up with parents over and over and over again. I'm just fighting with my teenager all the time. I have been there. Even as a pediatric nurse practitioner, when I first started as a parent, I felt deeply insecure, and my oldest and I were in perpetual conflict until one day we found ourselves driving down the road, having the same old argument about the same old topic that, looking back, really didn't even matter. But at this time, she threw a book at my head while I was driving. Yes, that is how I started. And I recognized I was going to need a new mindset and a new skill set going forward so that that cycle did not perpetuate itself. So let me give you, again, this is a fireside chat between me and you. Let me give you some encouragement and some practical tips. Let me give you three lifelines when you're tired of fighting with your teen all the time. The first thing is to choose your battles. If you feel like you're fighting all the time, you probably are fighting all the time. And it's because you're not choosing your battles, you're choosing every battle. And if you choose to battle your child, no matter if they're 4 or 14, on everything, that is just going to end in frustration and tension in your relationship. So I've given this challenge before, but I'm going to remind you of it again. Think about the top 3 struggles you are having with your child. Again, no matter what age. And I want you to write everything down. You can write it all down, have a journaling session, have a venting session. You can call your sister who also loves your kids or whoever your support person might be. And just talk about that and let that pressure valve release a little bit. And once you have all of those things out and you think, okay, look at all of these things. Wow. I mean, these are all the struggles we're having. The hard part is to choose the top 3 things. What are those three priorities that you're going to go to war for at every time and every way? You're going to go toe-to-toe. It's really important. Now, that may be character issues. That may be timeliness issues. But if, you know, if your child is struggling mightily academically, if they're struggling with their attitude, then this just might be the season to let that messy room go. And so when you're tempted to engage in conflict with your kid, you've got to ask yourself, is this on my top three list? And if it's not, just let it go. Really, truly, and just give yourself some grace and some breathing space in your relationship to not have conflict. And again, this can be the element of surprise, which is a great tool to have in your tool belt as a parent, because throwing your teen off pace and surprising them can have an emotional reset or even a psychological reset. So number one on the three lifelines, if you're following along, was choose your battles. Number two is active, generous listening. So if you find yourself lecturing your way to try to leverage behavioral change or arguing your way into right relationship, try listening instead. Listen with your face. Put everything down. Just try to keep an open mind. Cultivate curiosity, express empathy, and just try to listen when your urge is to talk. The third lifeline, if you feel like you're fighting with your teen all the time, is going to be, oh, this is a hard one, parents, to say you're sorry. Oh, that's so hard. But look around and see what in this situation is mine to own. Maybe it's a little piece of that, and that could not negate the responsibilities that your teen has, but just giving them some space and modeling how to say you're sorry can really breathe life in your relationship. Now, in today's day and age, we talk a lot about fighting culture, and that is important. We absolutely have to fight culture. We have to protect our kids against negative influences that come their way. But if your mission in life and parenting is to fight against culture, that's a fight you won't always win, because there will be setbacks. There will be defeats. There will be unexpected surprises that make an unwelcome appearance into your life, because we don't have perfect kids and we're not perfect parents. Those things will happen. It's a defensive strategy, but you also have to have an offensive strategy. So if you make your mission, your offensive mission, to fight for the heart of your teen, I'll tell you, that's something that culture is not fighting for. They don't care about nurturing your child's heart. There is a parent-shaped hole in every child's heart that only you can fill. Now, this is where we have to get over our own insecurities, because sometimes it doesn't seem like we're very welcome in our kids' lives, or they're not giving us instant gratification. I don't know about you, but in my house, I don't have my kids standing around in the corner saying, "Wow, Mom, you did such a great job delivering that discipline. Wow, you're on it today. You are just like a superstar mom." No, that doesn't happen. So we have to learn to get our affirmation from God. And what happens a lot of times is, as we are fighting through these insecurities, we start to think of these things in our head. We start to make lies that seem like truth. Now, these are the lyrics from a song by Matthew West, and it really struck me that this is very applicable to parenting. And the lyrics say, "Truth be told, lies we believe." Lie number one, you're supposed to have it all together. And when they ask how you're doing, just smile and tell them, "Never better." So many times we do this when someone asks, "How are you?" We just say, "Fine." And meanwhile, I can't tell you how many times I have really pressed in and asked in that moment and seen tears spill over the eyes of parents. And not too long ago, even one parent expressing guilt because she was thinking, maybe it will be good when my child goes to college, because we're fighting all the time and I don't know if this is sustainable. So that's a lie, friends. You are not supposed to have it all together. In this world, we will have trouble, but we are supposed to take heart because God has overcome the world. And you need to have people who you trust. Not everybody needs to know everything, but somebody needs to know everything. Somebody you can trust. And you can say, you know what? I am not doing well at all today. I do not have it all together. Because that is each and every one of us as parents in some day or way. Lie number two. Everybody's life is perfect except yours, so keep your messes and your wounds and your secrets safe with you behind closed doors. Parents, we are susceptible to this lie. As much as we lecture our kids about looking at social media and that's not reality and looking at those curated posts and kind of, you know, chuckling and shaking our heads at our teens thinking, oh, yes, you know, you just think everything you see online is so perfect and important, but we do the same thing. We look at the family that looks like they have it all together, who's going on the perfect vacation, and we think, that's not me. But truth be told, as the lyrics continue from Matthew West, the truth is rarely told. I say I'm fine, but I'm not. I'm broken. When being honest is the only way to fix it. There's no failure, no fall. There's no sin you don't already know. So let the truth be told. And the truth is, you're doing okay. You hang in there, mom and dad. There will be better days ahead because God's mercies are new every morning. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the power of the words that you have in your relationship with your kid. Don't go away.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and happy Friday afternoon. If you've been listening before the break, we're having a Friday fireside chat sort of conversation where I'm offering encouragement to parents who feel like they are struggling. If you're in a season of struggle, this word is for you. Now, as parents, a lot of times, again, we think that our goal and our measure of success in life is having perfect parents. Like, that is the goal, to raise them to be perfect citizens that never make any mistakes and, you know, just get everything right. But the goal of parenting isn't about the destination, which is about them being 18 and then, you know, so raised. Now, my oldest is only 20, but I understand from mentors and people who have children older than me, our job as parents is never done. It's not about a destination. It's about conversation we choose to lead along the way and the relationships that we build and the journey that we are creating. Because being a perfect parent with perfect kids, with perfect relationships, is absolutely impossible. Healthy relationships aren't perfect. They're just that. They're healthy. Now, I'm often asked, well, what does that look like with your kids? Because I can tell you, confidently, without a shred of doubt, that I have a very healthy relationship with each one of my children. And it is one of the greatest joys of my life to do so. But it doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean that we don't have disagreements. It doesn't mean that we don't, you know, have arguments from time to time and that we're not at our best. That is just going to happen when you live with someone in such close proximity who sees all of the decisions that you make. So let me tell you a short story to illustrate how this looks in my life. So as you know, I told you when my daughter was 13, I realized I needed a new mindset and a new skill set. And that started a long and difficult, but so much so rewarding journey where I sought healing from past hurts that I had had so that my daughter would not have to carry those for me. But I'll tell you, as she prepared to go off to college, I felt all of those familiar fears start to return and those insecurities that I had, thinking, am I going to be able to do this? Is this the point where she's going to decide she doesn't need me in her life? Is this where our relationship's going to be distant or broken? And I was really fighting with those things. And so as she went off to college, she had been there for a few weeks, and I found myself on the college campus for a meeting that I was at. And so I let her know I was on campus trying to be very cool, very chill mom, you know, which aren't even cool words anymore, but that's what my generation would use. And she told me that she was too busy, that she couldn't see me because she was studying. And I was crushed, to be honest, but I thought, okay, this is college. I'm going to, you know, be good about this, and I'm just going to go get some food. So as I pull into the drive-thru, I look over to my left, and about 10 feet over, I see my precious daughter. And I think, oh my goodness, there she is. Like, this is amazing. Be cool. Be cool, Jessica. Do not lose it here. So I waited intentionally until she looked over at me and kind of gave a little wave. And let me tell you, friends, what happened at that moment was my daughter actually did not acknowledge me at all and turned her back on me and completely ignored me. So I did what any mature adult would do in that moment. And I started texting her furiously saying, I can't believe you would do this. Why did you do this? And she said, do what? What did I do? And I said, you just embarrassed me and rejected me and crushed my heart and soul. And she said, I didn't see you. Where are you? And I thought, oh, like you didn't see me. Great. And by the way, you're supposed to be studying, yet here you are in the parking lot of a restaurant at like 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Like, this is college, right? This is what happens. Just completely everything I've taught her. No, I'm not kidding. But it was very difficult, and we had continued conversations. And she came home not too long after that, and I took her to the eye doctor. And when I did, the eye doctor came out and told me, yeah, she's really farsighted and can't see 10 feet in front of her face. Yes, friends, that was absolutely humiliating. And I realized that she could not, in fact, see me. And I realized it hit me like a ton of bricks that I was projecting my fears, my experience, my past trauma, the way that I viewed the world, onto her. And she didn't own that or carry any of that, but she knows that I struggle with that. And so she knows that her role in this is to offer grace, and my role in that is to acknowledge it and say, I'm sorry. And that can be really hard. And maybe you are somewhere along the journey that I was, somewhere between book throwing to better, but, you know, still a long way to go. Maybe your teen is struggling with something that you're keeping secret because you're just so afraid of what people will say, especially people in your faith circle that you think might judge your child, and you don't want that to happen. And maybe you secretly wonder if your situation is going to be forever, or you're afraid people will label your child or treat them differently. Maybe you have secret fears that you're failing miserably as a parent, or you're trying your best, but it just doesn't seem like enough. And your kids are rejecting you or criticizing you, or you just feel like they're not showing those signs of growth that you're trying so hard to plant and to nurture. But here's the truth again, friends. God is a perfect father to us. But we are imperfect children. We're all imperfect parents with imperfect children. And God does have compassion for the hurt you're enduring, whatever that struggle may be, big, little, short, or long. And we need to have compassion for ourselves. The most important thing that we can do is to take our own faith journey, strengthen our faith, take healing, seek healing wherever we need it, so that journey of hurt doesn't become our kids' burden to bear. To have faith is to let go of trusting yourself and to place your trust in another. And you have to trust God to heal your brokenness. And, you know, if you have a parent who discloses something to you that they think, like, I feel like a failure, you can tell them, You are safe with me. I will keep your confidence. I will offer compassion and a listening ear. I will pray with you for healing and restoration. I will hold on to hope with you. You are not alone. Those are very powerful words that you can speak over a friend. And this is the last encouragement that I have for you as we close out the show today, because sometimes you think you don't know what to say. You want to say the right thing, either to your child or to a friend who's hurting over the things their child is experiencing. But sometimes just listening and a smile and a hug can go further than any words that you have. And sometimes when we say things that are, we mean well, it comes from our frustration where we just want the situation to be better. That can be hurtful. So let me give you this encouragement about your words and in whether whatever relationship that's in. Our human wisdom says, you've probably heard this before, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. That is really not true. In fact, that's a lie. The truth really goes like this. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will wound my heart and soul forever. Words can be forgiven, but words are very rarely forgotten. Words hurt deeply. I want you to think for a moment about the meanest thing anybody's ever said to you. It might have been your parent when you were growing up, or someone in school, or your spouse, or maybe even your child. It doesn't matter how many years have passed, you can go back easily and play those words on the movie in your mind, and it brings up an immediate emotion. And when you recognize that emotion, what you can do is hear that as your body's cue telling you to recircuit your response. Now, how do we do that to be a healthy model for our kids? The good news is that God's word is living and powerful. It's sharper than any two-edged sword. It pierces to the division of soul and spirit, joints and marrow, discerning thoughts and intents of the heart. Think about this. God spoke the world into existence. He did not use a potion, a magic wand, a cauldron, anything like that at all. His word spoke the world into existence. He simply said, "Let there be light," and there was. And in just the third verse of the Bible, we're introduced to the power of our words. In Genesis 37, we read the story of Joseph and how words changed the course of his history. Listen to the words that Joseph's brothers used as he approached. Now, if you remember, they were jealous of him. They did not like him. They perceived that he was his father's favorite, and I guess he really was. But this is what they said. "Here comes that dreamer." That does not sound like they meant it kindly at all. Like, "Oh, here comes that dreamer. Wonderful." No, I read this with bitterness and sarcasm. And then they go on to say, "Come on now, let's kill him and throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." The Bible gives four chilling words in verse 8. It says, "And they hated him. They sold him into slavery. And many years later, the brothers came to Egypt desperate for food. But you know what? Joseph forgave them." Now, it wasn't easy. I'm sure he remembered those words that had been spoken over him. And he was emotional. In Genesis 43, verse 30, it says, "Joseph looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and he wept there." So it was hard. It wasn't like this was a magical fairy tale ending. Despite Joseph's provision and his grace, it was still hard. And even after that, when Joseph's father died 20 years later, were his brothers happy to see him back for the funeral? Not a chance. They had more choice words. "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and he pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" Joseph had every right to do so, but he relied on a power greater than himself, saying, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." The tormentors were still tormented, while Joseph found peace and success in forgiveness. So I want you to go back and think about your earlier memory of something that someone said to you. And when that person spoke those words, they planted a seed in your life. But take a moment and consider a paradigm change. When you feel that emotional pull that wants to trample you and re-wound you with those words, say to yourself, "But God meant it for good." And friends, whatever you are going through right now, whatever season of struggle, and I've heard from so many, whether your child is self-harming or has suicidal thoughts or is just depressed and has poor self-esteem or whatever it is that seems like it's insurmountable, this trial may seem difficult, but God can mean it for good. How can we reframe that for our kids? So I challenge you to find something positive about that negative or traumatic experience that you had and share that story with your child. Say, "This is something that I experienced, but here's how God used it for good in my life." And you can help reframe their brain to think about it in that way. Tell them about what it taught you, what fruit that's experienced, and what reasons for which you can be thankful. I'm going to end by praying a prayer over you that I've taken from James chapter 3. God, our words are a match that can set fire to an entire forest. Our speech is a gift from you to be stewarded well. Forgive us when we use our words to stain, burn, and harm others. Forgive us for the times we've used our words as a parent to condemn or to shame instead of blessing when our children are in need of blessing. Search our hearts and give us wisdom and humility in our responses to our children. Protect them from jealousy and selfish ambition. Bless our family conversation with peace, gentleness, reasonableness, and mercy. Help us to guide them impartially and fairly as we help them navigate their words and be a guard over our mouths. Help us to harvest righteousness as we sow seeds with our words. Well, amen. And earlier, friends, I gave you a challenge to make your kids' bed, leave a note and a snack, and don't say anything at all about it. If you're looking for another challenge, you can create a social media feed for your teen. Have people who love them write messages of affirmation and style it after their favorite social media platform if you're feeling so creative. But the power we have of our words for affirmation can be a game changer when you're in a season of conflict. So think about the words that you have, listen twice as much as you speak, and use your words to give your children blessing. Make sure you join us next week. We have some great shows lined up for you. We're going to be talking about some deep topics and some lighter ones, but you won't want to miss it. I'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.